This week on Making Contact.
We all are Oscar great. We all are Oscar great.
I'm a 36-year-old black man. I've had guns put to my head by police 30, 40 times in this lifetime.
Who polices the police? Do you or your neighbors have any say in the way your town's cops and sheriffs do business?
The police are institutionally incapable of investigating themselves.
For more than 35 years, cities around the country have been creating civilian oversight agencies, trying to make local police and sheriffs accountable to the communities they serve.
I do think there has to be a higher level of accountability because of the powers they have.
On this edition, we take a look at the police killing of Oscar Grant in Oakland, California, and the debate over who gets to decide when an officer has done something wrong. I'm Andrew Stelzer, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information. It's early in the morning, New Year's Day, 2009. A train is coming east from San Francisco with the Bay Area's rapid transit system, known as BART. It's filled with passengers. Allegedly, a fight breaks out on board, and BART police stop the train at Oakland's Fruitvale Station. They pull several passengers off the train. One is a 22-year-old African-American man named Oscar Grant. Grant is restrained with his hands behind his back and is forced to lay face down on the ground. Suddenly, a 27-year-old white officer named Johannes Messerly puts a gun to Grant's back and shoots him. Grant dies a few hours later.
Get off the train! They just shot him! They just shot that guy! They just shot him! I got you, motherfucker!
Dozens of people were there that morning with cell phones and cameras and recorded the shooting. Over the next few days, videos hit the local, national, and international news. Meanwhile, the BART Police Administration, which has its own independent police force, did nothing to the officer who shot Grant.
This is the third shooting in BART's history of taking someone's life. And of the three shootings, they all have been like, why did you do that?
Reginald Lyles is a former police captain in the city of Berkeley, one of the cities which the BART system passes through.
In about a 25-year history, there's been three officer-involved shootings that resulted in death. And of the three, they're all African-American, and they're all suspicious set of circumstances.
A week after Grant's death, hundreds of people hit the streets of Oakland, calling for justice.
Kill a lot of people, you know what I'm saying? And then don't nothing happen. They still keep their jobs. They got a pension. No, fuck that. It's time for them to lose their jobs. You know what I'm saying? We're losing our lives and we're losing our loved ones.
The protesters didn't just want Officer Messerly to pay for his alleged crime. They want citizen control over what they say is an unaccountable police force.
It should be another police that police the police. Who police the police? Who defends the people when somebody gets shot in the back and they still out here?
For weeks, protesters filled the streets of downtown Oakland. It seemed the longer BART police stayed silent, the angrier people got. Storefront windows were smashed and cars set on fire. But finally, almost 2 weeks after Grant was shot, Officer Messerly was arrested and charged with murder. The BART Board of Directors spoke out and made promises for reform. One of those promises included creating a civilian oversight board, a group of citizens who would investigate complaints made against BART's police force. But right away, it was clear that the community's vision for oversight was quite different from the police's. In a June 2009 meeting, BART Police Chief Gary G. expressed his doubts to the committee responsible for creating a possible oversight body.
I would question the ability of civilians to, without knowing the institutional history of a department, an officer's personnel file, specifics to a certain allegation, if it would be fair to the subject officer and to the department if the advisory panel were to be engaged in input as to discipline.
Committee member Reverend Daniel Buford responded to G's concerns.
If you got 95% purity on your police force, we'd like to see that other 5% out and that it messes with people when you're trying to protect the 5% or that little small percent that's the rotten eggs that are bad.
BART Police Officers Association President Jesse Secon agrees with the chief and says his fellow officers don't have confidence that citizens can evaluate police behavior.
The perception out there is that they don't have that same training and are not exposed to what the everyday officer out there has to deal with and may not have the understanding of certain actions that we have to take as far as our own safety as well as the public safety.
In the end, it appears the police got what they wanted. On July 8, 2010, more than 18 months after Oscar Grant's death, a jury found Johannes Messerly guilty of involuntary manslaughter. But a civilian oversight body for the BART police had still not been created. And the community was still unhappy. Messerly had beat the murder charge. The message received was, there's no real accountability for police.
Involuntary manslaughter, that wasn't no involuntary. He voluntarily shot that man in the back and took another life.
I think if he got convicted of second-degree murder, it probably would have mended a little bit more of the community with the police. But now this just makes it even worse. I mean, a verdict like this, the relations with the police and the community is terrible now. It's going to be even worse now. So when things happen in the community and the police want the people's help, they can't get it because of things like this, and that's terrible.
As protesters took over downtown Oakland the night of the verdict, store windows were smashed and fires were set once again. Meanwhile, a bill to create a watered-down oversight mechanism for the BART police was sitting on the governor's desk. But even if it's signed into law, advocates believe the oversight process won't have any teeth. There would be a police auditor who could recommend disciplinary action, but ultimately couldn't enforce anything. And that's not acceptable to people like Quentin Mecki.
It's not independent, and it's not true oversight.
Mecki is an aide to California State Assemblyman Tom Ammiano. Ammiano had introduced legislation that would create a stronger, more effective civilian oversight body for BART police than the one passed by the state legislature. But that bill never made it very far.
There will be community oversight, period. The police unions understand that. What they're trying to do is get away with doing the least amount possible. The police union, the lobbying group as far as the Peace Officers Association within the state, has a vested interest. Their members are going to naturally resist civilian oversight. That's historically been the case for the police departments throughout the country.
Next door to Oakland is the city of Berkeley, the birthplace for civilian oversight boards. The 1960s and 70s routinely saw thousands hit the streets for political protests. On several occasions, demonstrators were beaten and improperly arrested by law enforcement.
And in the name of the people of the state of California, I command you immediately to disperse.
Reginald Lyles joined the city of Berkeley's police force in 1973.
Berkeley had a free speech movement and a series of civil disobedience or riots. Then the issues around People's Park. So I think out of that tension came a demand by citizens of Berkeley for citizen oversight.
Lyles was in his first year as an officer when the citizens of Berkeley voted to create the Police Review Commission. It was the first civilian oversight agency in the country.
I don't think civilian review hurt the Berkeley Police Department. I think it made it better, without a doubt.
But at the time, the Berkeley Police Department wasn't happy.
I was literally told what our position would be on it. And I think our position in terms of law enforcement at the Berkeley Police Department and our police associations, we were against it.
Lyle says officers initially refused to testify at Police Review Commission hearings because of internal pressure.
We were just told that, you don't go over there, you're part of the Police Officers Association, we don't go over there, and we didn't.
It wasn't until after the city council gave the civilian body the power to subpoena officers that they started showing up to testify.
No one wants anyone looking over their shoulder and second-guessing decisions.
Barbara Attard was the director of the Berkeley Police Review Commission from 1997 to 2004.
I mean, what you find often is that when communities are trying to start oversight, there's a big push by the police association, by the police chief generally, to stop that, stop it in its tracks. Because if you can get away without having that oversight, you know, they feel that they have more freedom and won't have someone second-guessing them or someone criticizing their work.
Attard says Berkeley's Police Review Commission accomplished much of what it was created to do, influence changes in police policy. That included the use of pepper spray and the treatment of transgendered people. Reggie Lyles points out that unstructured police oversight has always existed, but says often that's not good enough.
Citizen oversight is always in existence. It's just a matter of who and how and what form does it come in. The Kiwanis Club members and the Chamber of Commerce and various other social clubs and business organizations apply influence on their elected officials and their police department. I mean, chiefs go to breakfast clubs. So this highly structured form of citizen review board comes about when that informal setting is not working effectively for everyone. Maybe certain groups are not able to share in that power or influence.
You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. Because of listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the U.S., Canada, and South Africa. To find out how to support us, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. Communities from Tucson to Atlanta are demanding the power to oversee their local police. But even when there is civilian oversight, their powers can be limited and easily stifled. Barbara Attard, a board member with the National Association for Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement, says police unions are powerful lobbies and are often leading the opposition against civilian oversight.
One thing that politicians don't want to be caught doing is not supporting their police department. And if a police department is allowed to portray the oversight agency as something that is a negative, that if they supported oversight, they are then anti-police, the agency won't have the power it needs to be successful or won't get the funding that it needs to be successful.
Police unions, like their member officers, often argue that civilians can't understand the work police do, and they're afraid a civilian review board will end up stacked with cop-hating activists who unfairly punish police. But Rashida Grenage, the director of People United for a Better Life in Oakland, or Pueblo, says there doesn't seem to be much evidence for that fear.
Citizens very rarely find them at fault, and this is true throughout the country. Citizen review boards' sustain rates are very, very low. It's between a 4% and a 20% sustain rate for the most part.
So why do police consistently oppose being overseen by civilians? Some say it's the blue wall of silence. It's an unwritten rule where officers refuse to report on another officer's misconduct or crime.
Law enforcement, by necessity, is a very tightly knit group.
In the 1980s, Jason Wechter was an investigator at the San Francisco Office of Citizen Complaints, or OCC. It's considered one of the strongest civilian oversight bodies in the United States.
They have to be, because unlike virtually anyone else, they go to work and they don't know whether they'll come home at night. And they're dependent on their colleagues, literally, for their lives. And so there has to be a very strong bond and a very strong trust. But that can also lead to insularity, to not learning as much. Understanding as much.
Wechter says civilians have an advantage in that they aren't involved with the politics of the police department and can take an unbiased look at incidents, department policies, and procedures. The San Francisco Police Department is the only one in the country that has trained civilians doing the entire complaint process, from intake to investigations, hearings, and ultimately choosing disciplinary action. The police chief can appeal, but a citizens' police commission has the final say. One of the key components is receiving the complaints.
Many people are fearful after they've had a negative encounter with the police. Uncomfortable, maybe a better word, of going to a police facility to file that complaint and maybe encountering the officer they had the incident with. They may feel far more comfortable going to a neutral building, sitting down with a civilian who may just draw them out a little better.
Wechter says one of the reasons the OCC is such a success is because funding and staffing are mandated by city law. There has to be one investigator for every 150 officers. That allowed the OCC to handle more than 1,000 complaints in 2008. The OCC also has the power to subpoena officers to testify, and mediation is used whenever possible. OCC Director Joyce Hicks says 71 cases were mediated in 2008, which saved time and money, and in almost every case, addressed the need a complainant had to confront the officer.
The officer was able to give the complainant the reasons why the officer took the actions that the officer did. Sometimes it results in an apology, sometimes it doesn't, but the most important part is that there is a dialogue that takes place.
Hicks used to work across the bay as the director of Oakland's Citizens Police Review Board, or CPRB, where she also was able to make some changes to police procedure she's proud of.
The office was able to make strong policy recommendations based on patterns that we saw in complaints, such as in the area of strip searches, such as in the area of crowd control, and also in the area of high-speed vehicle chases.
But while Oakland CPRB has a relatively strong structure on paper, Hicks says it's been underfunded and understaffed to the point of ineffectiveness.
It was a matter of priority on the part of the Oakland City Council, and it was determined that was not the priority.
Patrick Caceres, the acting director of the CPRB, says the board only has 3 investigators when they really need at least 8.
Because we're low on staffing, that could be, 9 months before, a person hears about the results of their complaint. Or in some cases, it could be that their case might go uninvestigated and simply be closed. But if there was a slew of complaints that suddenly had sprung up, we would be debilitated. We would not be able to manage the workload that we have.
The CPRB only handles about 80 complaints a year. The Oakland Police Department's Internal Affairs Division, or IAD, on the other hand, receives more than 1,000 complaints annually, which technically the CPRB could investigate, but they don't have the people power to do so. That means citizens have to file complaints with Internal Affairs, which can be uncomfortable and even scary. Paulette Hogan is one of dozens of people who spoke to Oakland City Council members in April 2009. She's in favor of stronger civilian oversight of the Oakland police.
After I sat in the office with the IAD after I was tased, I felt like I had tased the police officers. When they got through questioning me, I felt like I should just put my hands out and let them take me on to jail. Because they questioned me like they were trying to cover for their buddy.
Complaints about internal affairs go back decades. The Black Panthers formed in Oakland during the mid-1960s. During that time, the Oakland police were routinely accused of harassing African-American residents, planting evidence, falsifying reports, and assaulting innocent people. The Panthers were young, politically active Black residents who banded together to protect African-American neighborhoods from these police abuses. In the late 1990s, a gang of Oakland police officers, nicknamed the Riders, carried out a similar pattern of civilian abuse, ultimately leading to the city of Oakland paying out more than $10 million to 119 plaintiffs. Reportedly, the cycle continues today.
Now, we was in this truck, right on this street.
Marcel Diallo is an artist and community organizer in the Lower Bottoms neighborhood of West Oakland. Around midnight on Memorial Day of 2009, he was pulled over in front of his house for what seemed like no reason.
So I'm like, officer, Am I under arrest? Get back in the car. Am I under arrest? Get back in the car. Why are you asking me to get back in the car? I mean, am I under arrest? Get back in the car. So, I mean, at that point, it was like, you already see, this guy's not trying to have a conversation. He's being kind of arrogant and rude. And since I didn't get back in the car like he was ordering me to do, he rode up on me, twisted my arm, slapped the cuffs on me.
After more than an hour in the back of the police car, Diallo was let go. He was frustrated, but not surprised.
I'm a 36-year-old black man. I've had guns put to my head by police 30, 40 times in this lifetime. You know, it's not just about me being harassed in front of my house by a police. It's about just this kind of Gestapo attitude, you know what I mean? Like, that they roll around this nice neighborhood with and incriminalizing the citizenry, you know? Like, we're citizens, man, just trying to live our lives. We're property owners, we're fathers, we're mothers, we're cousins, we're uncles, we're daughters, we're sons.
And in the streets of Oakland, the frustration of the community hasn't gone away.
Oscar Grant! Oscar Grant!
And you, police, have the audacity to stand here with your guns and your chaos and act as though we're doing something wrong? We're not asking for anything revolutionary. We're asking for basic justice!
I don't think it's right that police officers can get away with murder. There's a reason to be pissed off, and I think a lot of people have had it with the injustice that the police officers are carrying out.
Unless the city government takes these issues seriously, the problems will get worse and the strife in the community will be worse.
And that strife continues, not just in Oakland, but across the country, especially in urban areas and African American neighborhoods. Reginald Lyles spent 30 years as a cop and says Americans need to understand the roots of the problem.
The mistrust is a historical one of injustice that goes all the way back to slavery and Jim Crow and lynching. So I can recognize why a community of African Americans or people of color say, well, you know what? We have a basic mistrust for, you know, local law enforcement. I mean, isn't that crazy? You don't have large numbers of white officers shooting white young men. You don't have large numbers of Asian officers or Hispanic officers or black officers shooting white young men. You don't even have large numbers of black officers shooting black young men. You see where I'm going? What's going on here?
If you're white and middle class, your interactions with police officers may be qualitatively and quantitatively different than that of a young African American man or a young Latino man. And you may say, I can't believe police officers would do something like that.
Jason Wechter says in San Francisco, there used to be doubts about police abuse claims from black, Latino, and gay community members. That changed in January of 1982.
And it was not until the night of the first Super Bowl victory celebration in San Francisco that turned into a riot. Middle-class people coming to and going from dinner in North Beach were assaulted by police officers. And suddenly their friend said, how could this happen? Well, I know they weren't rioting. And that opened various people's eyes to things that had been going on in San Francisco for quite some time.
The issue of police misconduct is one that is a very hard sell in terms of mainstream voters who don't see this as their issue, who don't foresee that they will have any issues with police or their children will, and therefore it doesn't really touch them.
Rashida Grenage says that getting public support for reform of the police department is extremely difficult, even with numerous scandals over the years.
We've had a few high-profile police abuse cases that have been videotaped, that have made national news, and that have momentarily shocked the conscience of the nation. And then the next day's news, and that was the end of it.
Reginald Lyles says citizen participation is the only way to begin to mend the wounds in the community.
The citizens need to be involved because you cannot effectively police a community that does not trust its own police department.
Cephas Johnson is the uncle of Oscar Grant, who was killed on New Year's Day by BART police in Oakland.
To be told what we see, we don't see, you know, we're tired of hearing that.
Johnson says he's frustrated, but hopeful that BART will value the community's concerns over the protestations of the BART police and a solid oversight body will come into being.
I still believe that something good can come out of this. Oscar didn't die in vain.
That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police.
Got a new one today.
That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast.
You are listening to Making Contact. I'm Andrew Stelzer. The documentary you just heard was primarily produced in 2009 and updated after the conviction of Bay Area Transit Police Officer Johannes Messerly in July of 2010. Messerly was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. To reflect on what effect that verdict may have on the movement for civilian oversight of the BART police and for police in general, I'm joined now by Rashida Grenage, the director of People United for a Better Life in Oakland, or Pueblo. Do you people now have a better understanding about the need for more accountability?
I wish I could be optimistic, but unfortunately, based on the experience we've had since the mid-90s of trying to advance civilian oversight in Oakland, I have to say that I am not able to be optimistic. The system that's in place that protects police officers and their behaviors is entrenched and is supported by state law, which also conceals a lot of their wrongdoing from the public. So as a result, it's very difficult to build momentum in the public and build pressure that can be brought to bear on politicians to, in fact, offer greater protection to civilians against the abuse of authority.
What about a murder verdict? Would that have made a difference in terms of people's ideas about oversight?
I think a murder verdict certainly would have helped considerably. It would have helped to alert the public to the fact that when you wear a uniform and a badge, with it goes the power over life and death. And we have had so many police-involved shootings in this country. We had the very highly publicized case of the murdered man in New York City as he was either coming out or going into his wedding. And we've had previous cases, Amadou Diallo and others, portrayed on national TV, lots of commentary, lots of interviews. And what has changed? I think that it's going to take a lot more than a high-profile case to move this agenda. It's going to take much more organization among folks who have been working on police accountability throughout the country. There's going to have to be a much stronger movement, a unified voice, and pressure brought to bear, possibly at the federal level, because it seems as though states and local jurisdictions are paralyzed by local politics.
Rashida Grenage is the director of People United for a Better Life in Oakland, or Pueblo. Rashida, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure, Andrew.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. This program was an update of a special collaboration between National Radio Project and Spot Us. For a CD copy of this program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. Or check out our website at radioproject.org to get our podcast, download past shows, or help make a difference by supporting our work. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.